JC Corcoran Podcast.
Desperate attempt to fill 24 hours of programming. Here's some bullshit that happened somewhere today. We've got some footage here of the bullshit, which began just after 3 o'clock this afternoon when residents in this neighborhood were shocked to see this fairly common thing happening. An attractive witness described the event in breathless terms.
I went to my window and I was like, whoa, there's some bullshit happening.
That happened right over there. I'm an older man, so you can trust what I say.
Authorities in special uniforms rushed to the scene to stand around while our cameras filmed them. Our reporter Keith Collins joins us now live from the scene of the bullshit through the use of expensive technology. Good to be with you again, Keith. We have a colorful graphic here that shows instances of bullshit like this are on the rise. Is that right?
Yes, although why is unclear. Some say it's because of one f***ing reason. Others say it's because of some other reason. I talked to this random expert on the subject who told me this thing you're about to hear him say right after he points at a piece of paper.
I spent my entire life attending the nation's most prestigious schools to talk about bullshit like this. I'm really just happy to be on TV.
Now let's see if we can drag this out a little longer by showing emails written by some of our viewers. I once saw some stuff kind of like the shit you're talking about happen. I have nothing more to add. Another person says, I am angry that things like this happen. I get mad about every bullshit thing I see. So obviously a lot of opinions there to make this story seem somewhat meaningful.
Oh, absolutely, Glenn. This bullshit has some broader implications. Here's a list of tips on how to avoid bullshit happening to you.
And here's some footage of Congress.
Yes, I see that.
Well, thank you, Keith. Let us know if there are any updates on this bullshit story from there.
There's no way there will be.
Very good. We'll check back with you in an hour anyway.
I'm just some... Yeah.
When we return, we'll look at live footage of a car chase taken from a helicopter and free associate about what's going on.
Did you hear him talking about it on the radio? Could your eyes believe the writing on the wall?
Hi, kids. It's the J.C. Corcoran Podcast for Thursday, April 15th, 2021. Normally, we'd be all whipped up on tax day here today, but we got an extra month. Thank you to our federal government for that. Well, I was looking at my calendar the other day, and I don't know why I started doing this. I have no idea. I just remember back in the early 1980s thinking, it would be sort of fun someday, you know, to look back in the rear view mirror. Let's just say it's 2021. And again, I'm thinking this back in 1982. And I'm thinking, well, it would be fun maybe 30, 40 years from now to be able to look back and remember what I was doing, who I was with, what city I was in, all that sort of stuff. Because I moved a lot, obviously, coming up in the radio business. And so all that stuff was going on. I just thought it would be sort of cool someday to be able to think, let me look this up and see what I was doing on this date. And so it was yesterday. It was 28 years ago. And let me just tell you, you know, over the years, I brought you, I think, really, really good interviews. And it's one thing to get somebody on the air, like a Tom Hanks or a Steven Spielberg, both of whom we've had on the show in previous years. And it's one thing to get them on, but it's another thing to get them on and have them say something or do something memorable. That's where a lot of people go bad. It's like, hey, we got Paul McCartney. Hi, Paul. It's like, hi. Okay, and the thing just goes downhill from there. In our particular case, we're ready. So when we get them on the air, bam-a-da, 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 we've got some great questions. You know, we start hitting them, and they wake up pretty fast. And, you know, sometimes it's the result of hard work. I mean, you're just making phone call after phone call, and people are saying no to you, and you just keep going, you keep going. Finally, you get a breakthrough, and the next thing you know, you got the person on the air, and you're doing the interview. sometimes it's a lot of hard work, and sometimes it's just a piece of cake. You're just sitting there minding your own business, and the telephone rings in 1993, and they say, here's the deal. Paul McCartney is going to play Busch Stadium in a couple of months. He's kicking off the tour in Las Vegas, and we're going to send you out to Vegas, and you're going to see the show, put you in a nice hotel, and you're going to see the show, and then you're going to have an interview with Paul McCartney, and then you're going to come back to St. Louis, and you're going to just dump this on the airwaves and get everybody all whipped up about it, so they grab all the Paul McCartney tickets, and everybody goes away happy. And so that's basically what happened. So you go out to Las Vegas, put you in a nice hotel, and then the concert was outdoors. And in fact, it was at that venue where all those people died, because there was a guy sitting up there in one of the hotels picking people off. They didn't even know where the bullets were coming from, and they finally realized the guy had knocked out the window of the hotel maybe 10 stories up and was shooting at people. They didn't even know where the bullets were coming from. So that's where this thing took place. Obviously, we're talking 1993, so this was well before the time of that incident. So we sit down, and it's an outdoor venue, and it's like, all right, here we go. Paul McCartney, let's go. And instead of Paul McCartney, the lights dim, the crowd noise just swells, and all of a sudden a movie starts. And it's on a giant jumbotron there next to the stage, and it is a PETA movie. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, to which Paul McCartney has belonged for many, many years. You won't eat any meat. And it was like maybe a 12 or a 15-minute movie. And the big climactic scene, it was about all this, it was all these horrible images of people being unkind to animals. And it culminated, and you can think I'm making this up, and I'm not, with the anal electrocution of an elephant. How somebody even came up with the idea of killing an elephant in that manner, I don't know. But, you know, shove a wire up an elephant's ass, and you turn on the juice, and bam, the elephant goes down. And that movie ended, like I said, 12, 15 minutes. And then it was like, and now here's Paul McCartney. And everybody was like, yeah, that was a hell of an opening act, Paul. Nobody likes controversial political issues shoved down their throat, or in the case of the elephant, up his ass, more so than people going out for a night of enjoyment and concerts and music. And yeah, man. But the concert was very, very good. And then next day, and they're like, okay, you get a chance to interview Paul McCartney. I'm like, ah, right. Well, it turns out it was what they call in the business a gangbanger. And that means it's, you know, 30 or 40 reporters and entertainment people from all over the country who had also been invited. And they just put us outside there at the same place where the concert was. And we're all just sitting there waiting. And then sure enough, here comes Paul McCartney. He's so thin. God, he's thin. And because he's so thin, he actually looks smaller than he is. But he came out, and it was very pleasant. I got my question in.
Hi, Paul. J.C. Corcoran, KMOV, CBS in St. Louis. We've heard stories about how the Beatles really looked up to Elvis Presley, particularly in the early days. And since we're all here in the city, that Elvis sort of adopted as a second home. Could you talk a little bit about what Elvis meant to you and the rest of the Beatles?
Yeah, I was in love with Elvis. He was a marvelous man. When I first saw his picture, I was blown away by his good looks. And when I first heard his first record, I was even more blown away by his voice. I think he was one of the great voices of the century.
What was the first song you heard him do?
Of Elvis's Heartbreak Hotel. And when we finally met him with the Beatles in Los Angeles, we had just an evening with Elvis, you know, and he was brilliant. He was just a real great guy. And I think it was before he took up residence here. So perhaps he was a little more, I don't know, straight. Anyway, we had a great evening with him. And he wanted to learn bass. So I sort of gave him a few clues and stuff. But he was just a great guy. You know, he seemed like a regular fella. And as I say, we were just all in love with him anyway. So it was a great evening.
I thought that was a great question, by the way. I got some dirty looks from some of the other reporters and administrators and stuff like that, because they're like, no, we want this to be about his current tour, his current music. Paul, what are you doing in the studio these days? And it's like, I am under absolutely no requirement to ask a question that you like. And then I flew home and put the interview and the other stuff on the air and talked about how good the concert was. And I still remember that night I was roaming around backstage at the McCartney show. And all of a sudden, a golf cart started approaching very, very quickly. And I got out of the way, wide open area, you know, backstage, because it's Busch Stadium, right? And this golf cart just goes flying by. Everybody gets out of the way. And as it goes by, I turn around and look, and on the back of the golf cart is Chuck Berry. He was going backstage to have a little chat with Sir Paul prior to the show. All of that 28 years ago yesterday. And now this.
Is it true that you've been married to the same woman twice?
Yeah.
And so you were married once and then you got a divorce.
Yeah, and couldn't help myself. What we ended up doing was hanging out all the time.
Right.
You know, because we really didn't know how to really be apart.
Right.
It's just that when we were married and living in the house and all of that, it was just that we didn't know how to do that. My parents are married 46 years, and they looked tremendous. And, you know, the first time I was married, like, you know, just under an hour. It was like my friends would come over to my house. I was already like a burglar in my own home. I mean, they'd come over and say, Daryl would say, oh, shut up. She's right there. Now, you see, like, if you guys laugh at that at all, it's because you must know what it's like to drop a towel on the floor and hear an alarm go off. Because you broke a rule, the kind of rule which exists only in a house full of love. Yes, here you'll find rules for the bathroom, rules for the kitchen, rules for the sweet and low dispenser. That stack of dishes in the sink, how long can they stay there? You'd better know. Because somebody knows. And since there's only two of you on the rules committee, how much you want to bet, it ain't you. Now, you don't get divorced because the thrill is gone. It's because you don't know how to stack the tapes right underneath the VCR. Or you put the spoon. My wife would get so mad at me that the hole in her mouth was no longer big enough for all the topics to come out at one time. And she'd like yell at me as I'm being yelled at by an auctioneer, like, Daryl, damn it! $100 bid, $100 seat, $100 bid.
It's Daryl Hammond, formerly of Saturday Night Live, being interviewed by Tom Arnold right there. Daryl Hammond told us years later that he was suffering from absolutely crippling depression during his days on Saturday Night Live. I was like, so let me try to understand this. So you're on stage. You got one of the most coveted jobs in show business and in professional comedy, and you're on every week, and they're saying your name, and you're performing, and you're doing this stuff, and you're getting enormous laughs from the audience, and people are writing about how funny you are and how the show is, but even with all that, you're still suffering from crippling depression. He's like, yeah, that's pretty much it. Guess he's doing better now. We wish the best. He's a really, really nice guy. He's really funny on the show. Well, one of the things that I think kicked off my broadcast career in fine fashion was I managed to talk the university when I was a senior in college. I managed to talk the university into qualifying for something called independent study. And if you went to college and you were in the liberal arts program, maybe you had an experience like this too. And basically what it means is there's no classroom, there's no teacher, there's no nothing really. You're on your own for an entire semester, but at the end of the semester, you better show up with something pretty damn impressive. It's almost like doing a master's thesis. So they leave you alone, and at the end, you better have something that hits it out of the park, or these guys get mad and vindictive, and they'll keep you around for another year if the work you put together appeared to be something that was substandard. So what I said is, I'm growing up in the mid-1970s as a college kid, and I'm only about, 70, 80 miles from Chicago. How about if I put together a documentary or a documentary series at the end of the semester? I will show up with this fantastic series in which I interview four or five of the biggest names in Chicago radio. And I think this professor was sort of setting me up because he figured I couldn't do it, and he was going to actually take sadistic glee at the end of the semester and going, oh, you messed up, Corcoran. There's your F. We'll see you next year. Better get an apartment or a dorm because we're keeping you back. I really did find these guys sort of sadistic in that way. So I figured, okay, if you need to be hit over the head, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to hit you over the head. And sure enough, I was able to corral five or six of the biggest names in Chicago radio, including people who don't even do, who back then didn't even do interviews. And yet I got them. How I did it? To this day, I'm still not sure, but I show up with this thing at the end of the semester. But you had to do more than one. I think I had to do three. And one of the guys I interviewed is somebody you saw in a movie, a Steven Spielberg movie, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. That movie and a lot of stuff in the movie was all based on the research of a guy by the name of Dr. J. Allen Hynek. This was a government researcher back in the 50s and 60s. And the government went to him and said, look, we got to debunk this UFO stuff. People are running around thinking they're seeing UFOs. And, you know, we know that you think it's all BS. So get out there and put together a report. And then we're going to put you on TV at the end. And you're going to tell all these Americans that are convinced that there's flying saucers flying around. We're going to convince them that you've done this research and that it's all bullshit. And he's like, sure, I can do that. So he starts doing the research, and shortly thereafter, he completely flips and realizes that this stuff is all true. So again, the government hires him to debunk all this stuff, but as soon as he starts really getting, you know, waist deep in all of this, he realizes, holy crap, this stuff isn't made up. It's all real. A couple of years ago, I was driving back home from Gulf Shores, Louisiana, where we were doing some vacationing down there, and I saw the sign for Pascagoula, Mississippi. And those of you who were around in the, I guess it was mid-1970s, will remember one of the most famous cases in UFO research and history, as these two guys who were sitting in a swamp at night, and according to the people who examined them afterwards, they had a close encounter of the third kind. Close encounter of the first kind is you saw a UFO. Close encounter of the second kind is, I think that's when you have some sort of actual contact with a UFO or something in it. And third kind is you get the old anal probe. Whatever's flying around out there checking us out really seems to be interested in the anal probe. I'm sure there's lots of conversations on the spacecraft where the people who have been abducted are arguing with the Martians, going, come on, come on, no, I don't want to do that. And the Martians are like, all right, just the tip. So, and there isn't a woman alive listening right now who hasn't had that conversation at some point. So anyhow, I was in college in DeKalb, Illinois, and I got on the old Greyhound bus and went to Northfield, Illinois, just north of Chicago, right on the edge of the Northwestern University campus, where he had a house. And upstairs, he had actually a fairly small room, and there was the Center for UFO Studies. He had a gal working for him and everything. And, you know, you go up there and you start reading cases, and there's thousands of them up there, just thousands. And this is in the pre-computer age. We're talking 1970s. So it's just paper, just mounds and mounds and mounds of paper. And as he told me in the interview, when people volunteer or when he hires people to do work for him, the first thing that everyone wants to do is read cases. And they get tired of that usually after the first hour or two, because you start reading all these cases and they're basically all the same. They're all exactly the same. We were just sort of walking around minding our own business and this thing showed up and we looked at each other like, holy crap, what is that? And it just sort of goes on from there. But whether these things are actually happening or whether there's some sort of psychological phenomenon going on, these things that are happening to these people are really happening in some way, shape, or form. Now, I put that giant asterisk there because, and this was one of the best explanations of anything I think I've ever encountered. And that was, he said, look, are actual UFOs, giant spaceships, flying into these people's backyards and having an encounter with them? Maybe. But try thinking of it in these terms. Imagine if you went to one of the most uncivilized places on Earth. Okay, so you go to the Australian Aborigines down there. These people have not, discovered technology. They got no TVs, got no radios, no internet, nothing like that. They're still running around in loincloths with spears and stuff like that. And they are just not subject to anything that is, shall we say, modern day. So if you went down to Australia and started talking to these people and you tried to explain to them that as we're speaking, there are television pictures going through the air right now, right past us. But unless you have a television receiver, for lack of a better word of explaining it, unless you have a little television, those pictures, those images, all those things happening on TV are just passing through us. But unless you have a receiver, you don't really see them. It doesn't mean they're not there. It just means that the kind of apparatus that you need to be able to see the television signal that's passing through the air right now, unless you have one of those, you don't see the images. Now take that concept and apply it to the idea of UFOs. Could it be that there's some activity going on that people can only experience if they have, and maybe even if it's only temporary, if they have some way to, shall we say, quote unquote, receive these images and these activities that are going on? I know that's pretty big stuff for 7 o'clock in the morning. That's a lot for your brain to process, but it'll make sense later, trust me. But he said, you know, even from a medical standpoint, you can wire these people up, electrocardiograms, heartbeat, you know, just involuntary physical reactions to reliving stories and everything. These are off the scale. He said, whatever happened to these people really happened. Now, whether it physically took place or whether it was some sort of psychological phenomenon, I can assure you that these people are not lying. And the other thing you notice, after you could read 200 cases in an afternoon, they're all the same. These people don't know each other. The degree of collaboration would have to be so sophisticated. Well, never mind. Anyhow, and if you didn't hear this, last week the Pentagon confirmed that a leaked UFO video that surfaced online was real Navy footage, and they can't explain it. So does that mean we're going to make alien contact soon? The online betting sites sure think so. The odds of alien contact this year dropped from 200 to 1 before the Pentagon announcement to 20 to 1. And the odds of contact this month alone dropped from 500 to 1 to 50 to 1. So I hope they're coming in peace. And Dr. Hynek was old when I interviewed him, so he is no longer with us. But the next time you see the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, it's sort of towards the end of the movie when the giant boo, 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 boo thing shows up. And you see a guy with a goatee and glasses, elderly man, just come out for about 2 or 3 seconds. And people are like, who the hell is that? That's Dr. J. Allen Hynek. And Steven Spielberg, as a tip of the cap for all the research that Hynek did over the years, that was his way of acknowledging the work of Dr. J. Allen Hynek in that movie, which I thought was very, very cool. And now this.
The A-List Interview.
Keith Olbermann giving us dirt from being on the road with Joe Buck.
Joe has on several occasions stayed up past midnight.
Oh!
Joe gave me a lift from the hotel in St. Louis to his dad's restaurant and wasn't wearing a seatbelt.
Oh! It just keeps getting worse.
He said, I'm looking for directions to walk to it just so I don't walk the wrong way because I know it's down the block. And I got the concierge out there. I said, just point me in the right direction. And I hear this voice come up from the car. I can give you a lift. Get in the car and, you know, we're talking. And all of a sudden he stops. Okay, we're here. We've been in the car 90 seconds. What the heck is this?
JC and the Morning Show, Graham.
The website dating.com just ran a survey where they found people love butt pictures. 98% of people say they really liked getting a butt selfie from somebody versus 87% who liked getting a regular selfie. So odds are someone would rather get a photo of your butt than your face. Women are more likely to send them than men, but men definitely get into it too. And 77% of people say sending a butt picture helped improve their romantic connection. A new study figured out how many pimples the average person will pop in their lifetime. The average woman will pop 4,153 pimples, and the average man will pop about 3,800. I had no idea this was all going on. Guy in Florida got kicked out of the house by his grandma on Saturday, so he went to a woman's house. When she didn't invite him in and offered him money instead for a hotel, he threatened to set her place on fire, so she called the cops. He drove off straight into a pond. Then he swam back to shore and was arrested. Yeah. New survey found 1% of people working from home have attended an on-camera work meeting shirtless. And another 1% have been completely naked. Yes, that's with their camera on. If you have trouble waking up in the morning, the best way to wake up more alert and less groggy is waking up to a song you like, according to a new study, and it should be an upbeat song, so don't pick something depressing. Sharon Osbourne is going to pop up with Bill Maher tomorrow night and drag us through that real-life nightmare even further. The White House Correspondents' Dinner has been canceled for the second year in a row thanks to COVID. Brad Pitt spotted in a wheelchair leaving a dental appointment. That's only because the medical center forces people to leave in a wheelchair. Got a gay bachelor, Colton Underwood, did the bachelor show, and I guess he was, I don't know, like a 25-year-old virgin or something like that. Now we know why. I like this story. Kira Sedgwick said that she was invited to Tom Cruise's house about 30 years ago. And she's just sort of walking around the place. And she goes over to the fireplace. And over the fireplace, there's a little button. So she figures, let's see what happens when you push the button. The smart move would have been, hey, Tom, what's the button over your fireplace for? Oh, don't push that. It was a panic button. The police came. She has not been invited back to the house, and that was 30 years ago. Netflix has been keeping you awake for years, and now they want to help you go to sleep. They teamed up with a meditation app, Headspace, for a new show called Headspace Guide to Sleep. It premieres in 2 weeks. Don't expect an autobiography from Mick Jagger. He's not interested in doing it. Said he actually thought about it in the 1980s and quit very early on in the process because he said it was dull and upsetting. He said, quote, I didn't enjoy it, reliving my life to the detriment of living it now, end quote. Latest on COVID, another good reason to get vaccinated. New study found getting COVID increases your odds of developing erectile dysfunction by 600%. This sort of goes hand in hand, washed hands, with that story from a couple of weeks ago where people say they're masturbating three times a day. Three times a day. I've been married for 13 years. I'm down to three times a day. More COVID stuff. When airlines keep the middle seats empty, it reduces the risk of exposing passengers to COVID by one-third. But all the airlines are going to have their middle seats filled again by the end of the month, so never mind. An tax prep business in Massachusetts facing $135,000 in fines for banning employees and customers for wearing masks. Not for not wearing a mask, for wearing a mask. Jaleel White has his own strain of marijuana, so now when he says, did I do that? He's not being cute. He really can't remember. Seth Rogen turns 39 today. His party BYOB, bring your own bong. And it was on this date in 1955 that the first McDonald's franchise opened, and a couple of burgers made that day are still under the heat lamp. And it was 74 years ago today, the year 1947, Jackie Robinson became the first African-American to play in a regular season Major League Baseball game. We're progressing as a civilization just very, very, very slowly. All right, that's the podcast for Thursday, the 15th of April, 2021. We are here every weekday morning at 7 o'clock with 30 minutes of fresh material, absolutely free. And again, we ask you to spread the word. I don't have any big advertising budget for this, so the best thing you can do to help me is let all your friends know, especially the ones who used to like the old radio shows back in the day, that they can get this, and this is better than nothing, right? So we'll talk to you again bright and early tomorrow morning at 7. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.